Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it's been a long road. I don't know where it's gonna take me. All I got faith, my fans, my loved ones, my block, my people. Sort of, it's a struggle. You just gotta keep up, keep walking, keep your eyes on the prize. The other foot in front of you, you never know where life will take you, man. Ride with me.
Back in the 70s, dad jumped the boulder. A little earlier, my grandma raised a daughter. A beautiful thing, she was a ghetto flower. Caught a young man's attention with her power. It was love at first sight, I saw she thought. But a couple months later, he left her with a broken heart. Young and naive, only 17. About to have a young mouth to feed. Head down, she could feel the shame. A couple months later, labor pains. She looked down in her new son's eyes. A flashy smile, as big as the skies. Pops gave it being a man to try. Which is a mechanic, mama of a Burger King. Meanwhile, late at night, she was studying.
Good evening. Hey, how's everybody doing? Welcome to my show. It's Friday evening. Hopefully, you've got some great plans lined up afterwards. Thank you for joining me. This is Shirley Alejandro, and I am Ordinary Woman, and you are here at our Diamond in the Rough Talk Show. Today we have a great guest. Her name is Carrie Sheehan, and I will be connecting with her in a few minutes. But in the meantime, just want to share a thought with you. Just want to welcome you and want you guys to just take a minute and reflect on the week you just had. Some of you have the thank God it's Friday syndrome. Some of you are saying this day could not have come quick enough. Years ago when I was very young, nope, the dinosaurs did not roam the earth when I was that young. I worked in a particular company. And I remember there was this sweet lady who was probably in her 60s. And one of the nuggets of wisdom that I got from her was one time we were in the ladies' room and this young girl said, "Oh, my goodness, I am so glad it's Friday. I just couldn't wait for this week to be over." And she said to me after this young lady left, "Isn't it sad that we spend our whole life wishing our days away?" She's like, we have the weekend, we enjoy those 2 days, and then come Monday, we spend all week just wishing and hoping that those 5 days fly by, and they're gone, so we can have our weekend again. And that always stuck with me. And then she said, and then one day you wake up, and you're my age, and you say to yourself, where did the time go? You wished it away. So it really hit me how important it is to really appreciate every minute of every day, to savor it, to enjoy it, and to think about this journey that we're on called life. I know that I've heard many times say, life is a journey, not a destination. We focus so much on where we're going, we lose sight of the path that we're taking to get there. Kind of like when you're driving to work, you're really not thinking about anything except getting to work on time, hopefully getting there without any accidents, without any incidents. So we never really take the time to look around us. And it's because we live in such a fast-paced world. I know for me, a couple of months ago, it was a real eye-opener because where I live, they're recently having a lot of construction. And the other day, I was actually stuck in traffic for a little bit. And it was the first time, I think, in a couple of years that I have been slowed by traffic in this particular street because there isn't a street light or anything. And I actually got a few minutes to look up and look around. And I just noticed all these amazing things. I noticed this beautiful garden there that I had never seen before. I actually noticed houses that I didn't even know were there before. Noticed an apartment complex. Noticed this really beautiful dog that had this cute little doghouse. And the dog was running around, and it's evident that this dog had been here for a while, but I never noticed him. And it gave me a whole new appreciation for my neighborhood. The other thing it gave me an appreciation for was that even though I do walk my neighborhood a lot, when I walk my dog, always have the headphones on, focused on my music, focused on telling the dog, hurry up, get your business done, clean it up, and back home. Well, what I did the following day was I actually walked my neighborhood, taking the time, smell the roses, kind of like what my dog Buddy was doing. You know how male dogs have to smell every nook and cranny before they find just the right spot to go to the bathroom. Well, I did the same thing, not the finding a spot to go to the bathroom in, just taking it in and actually smelling flowers and enjoying it. And I'll tell you, what an amazing, amazing experience. I got to listen to the birds, the sound of kids playing, because there's actually a couple of schools off the neighborhood. Got to actually say hi to some of my neighbors. Got to actually enjoy so many things. And actually got a couple of chuckles at some of the things my dog did because I was actually paying attention. So what I want to leave you with today, just a thought, is enjoy the day. Savor it. You would be surprised by the amazing things that are out there that you never noticed. So that's my spiel on Friday, and I hope that you guys take it into account. And my challenge to you is this coming week, don't wish your week away. Think of ways that you can enjoy every minute in the time that you are in it. Even at work, I'm sure if you focus on the positive, there's a coworker, maybe a boss, a coffee vendor, the paper person, someone that you can actually take a minute and say, hey, what's going on? What's up? And you might actually meet a new friend, have something in common, and really realize what an enjoyable life we have if we just take the time to savor the little things. And that's my spiel for today. I'm going to see if Carrie's on the line, so if you'll hold on a minute. Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Miss Carrie. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good. Thank you so much for joining me on my show. How are you today?
I'm doing good.
That is so cool. I'm so glad that you were able to join me, and we have an interesting time. I'm going to ask you a lot of cool questions, and I know what an amazing, bubbly person you are, and I think our listeners are going to get a kick out of you. So right out there, see, there's that laugh. I swear to goodness, anytime Terry's in the room, she giggles, and everybody starts laughing. And seriously, after a few minutes, we're all like, what are we laughing about? It's just contagious. It's just like, I don't care what kind of a mood you're in. It's like a magical little tinkling laugh that goes through the room, and everybody's in a better mood. And I don't know, Carrie, you have this energy about you when you walk into a room. I love it. If we could bottle it, I'd be a millionaire.
Aw, thank you.
You're welcome. So, Carrie, honey, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Let's see. I'm 25. I'm a dental assistant.
So, now, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Lowell.
Mm-hmm.
And
you grew up in Lowell all of your life?
Yeah, I lived here almost all my life. I've lived in Utah for 2 years. Or almost
mm-hmm.
here. But yeah, mostly here.
Cool. Now, your family, it's your mom and you have siblings?
Yep, I have two older brothers.
Oh, cool.
Yep. One Michael, yeah. One's named Michael and the other one's named Josh.
Cool.
And,
so you're the baby?
What's that?
You're the baby?
Do I have a baby?
No, I said, you're the baby.
Oh, yes. I was like, no, I don't have a baby. Yes.
No, we know you don't have a baby. No, you are the baby. You're the youngest, right, in that group?
Yep.
So, Carrie, one of the reasons that I wanted you on my show, and again, that's why I call it my Diamond in the Rough talk show, because I see so many amazing qualities in so-called average people, and when you get to talk to them, you realize they're really not that average because you've done a lot of really cool things. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about, among many of your other talents, now, you like to act.
Uh-huh.
So what have you done as far as acting?
My first thing that I started doing was a thing called Youth Expression Theater, and that was through Girls Incorporated. And, I did a couple of shows there. I did one called Painted Face, and that's it's about a girl who tries to kill herself, and her friends and family stop her, and And then at the end, we like had a talk back with the audience, and it was meant for like, we went to some schools, middle schools, and it was meant to like bring awareness to suicide. And we at the end did this thing where we gave out these little cards from, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Yellow Ribbon Project. Mm-hmm. It's a different yellow ribbon than most people know of, which are, you know,
Why don't you explain a little bit to our listeners about this particular yellow ribbon? Because I know a lot of people, when they think yellow ribbon, they think of armed forces and that kind of thing.
Exactly.
What exactly is it?
Well, this yellow ribbon is to remember people who have either died from suicide or survivors of suicide. And survivors mm-hmm. could be people who tried to kill themselves and they woke up in the hospital, or someone who lost someone to it. So, like me, when I was younger, my best friend, in between eighth grade and high school, she killed herself, and it was something that was really hard for me to deal with. But that doing that show was, I felt more empowered to talk about it, and I talked to the audience at the end about it, and I actually played the girl's best friend in the show. So at first I was like, oh my gosh, I can't do that, and because that's, you know, what I was. And so but then I was able to speak out about it and talk to the members of the audience and get them knowing, like the kids in the middle school, about how important it is to be able to be there for someone if they come to you and say, you know, that they're having these feelings, that you help get them help. And that's what the project is. It's these little cards that that talk about, you know, it says, you know, it's a card, it's a no questions asked card, and you can give it to your friend, and it says, you know, I'm having these feelings, I feel suicidal, can you please help me? And it's so that they don't have to talk about it to that person, but then you can go and get them the help once you see that card. And so, and that was done by a family who had lost their son to suicide. And the reason they did the yellow ribbon was because he had a car that he loved that was a yellow, I think it was a Mustang, that he he fixed up. So, and that's why they did the yellow ribbon, because it was to remember their son. And so they started the Yellow Ribbon Project. But
that's amazing that you got involved in something like this. And I actually have some experience with that issue with suicide that I'll cover in a little bit. But now let me ask you a question. Did you feel that when you were in this play and you acted these parts out, was that a healing process for you?
Oh, most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel that
it was a healing process for you?
Well, because I was so young when it all happened, because I was like 14, so it was right before I went into high school, I just had a hard time dealing with it, and I never like talked to anyone about it. I mean, I talked to people about it, but I didn't, you know, I didn't really heal from it. And so this was my sophomore year in high school that we put on this play. And so they had a therapist come in and talk to all of us. We had like a group about it because we were all going to be, you know, talking about this subject to people in an audience. So we needed to know what we were talking about. And so she asked us if any of us had ever, you know, tried to kill ourselves, or if we knew anybody who did. And you know, I just hadn't really talked about it. So I started telling people about her. And I just broke down crying. And I guess it wasn't something that I had dealt with yet. And being that character who was able to help save her friend was, it was just very, very, very healing. So I was able to talk to this therapist about it, and, you know, with the group there, and everybody was very supportive, and it was just a really good thing. And then when we were talking to people in the audience about, you know, how important this project is and the reason we decided to do this play. And I told them the story of my friend.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was really healing to talk about it, to be able to bring her name back again, because a lot of people, I mean, I hadn't talked about her in a long time. And I wanted people to know who she was because, you know, she was a great girl and she should have gone through all those things. And so every time I would go through something like my 16th birthday, I would always think, you know, mm-hmm. she ever become 16. She never had a sweet 16. And then when I went to prom, I thought of her, you know, because she would have been at school with me. We were both supposed to start at Lowell High as freshmen that fall, but she had killed herself during the summer. So
mm-hmm.
like, well, at high school. So, and so it was interesting. I like took her with me and I, you know, tried to live the life that I, you know, wish she would have had, you know, lived
it up. And now that's one of the things that I find interesting with survivors of suicide. I noticed that there's two phenomena that happen, and I'm so glad that you're involved in programs like this. One of them is the guilt complex, where people mm-hmm. feel this guilt because they didn't understand, they didn't see the warning signs, they feel guilty because they're alive and their loved one isn't. The other phenomenon I see is the fact that it's almost like taboo to talk about this person. It's like so different. Like, for example, if the person had died in a car accident or of a disease, it's okay to talk about it. But because it's suicide, there's this stigma about it that
mm-hmm.
people don't want to talk about them. And it's almost like they never existed. And that's even harder for the loved mm-hmm. ones.
Yeah.
So I can understand where you, like,
this gave me that whole new venue to be able to discuss it and, you know, to not be afraid to tell people her story because, I mean, I just didn't have that. And that's why I think I broke down crying that day when mm-hmm. I was talking to everyone about it, because it wasn't okay to talk about her, you know, mm-hmm. and I never did. So, you know, because I would notice how uncomfortable everybody would get if I would try to talk about her. So it was a way for me to do that, and I hadn't gotten that. And I did blame myself a lot. And until I started talking about it and talking to people about it, then I started feeling better about it and knowing that it wasn't my fault. And, you know, there was nothing I could do that I should stop blaming myself, you know.
Yes,
and I didn't have that for a couple of years, you know. I went a couple
mm-hmm.
of years blaming myself. So I'm glad that I got that chance, you know. I think I was led to, you know, to do that because the director, you know, is the one that picked the play, and, you know, it was just meant to be. Like, I needed to deal with that, and that was the way for me to do it. And
that
I just learned
true.
That expression and theater has mm-hmm. been, you know, my thing in life, and, you know, where I'm, you know, happy, and, you know, people do drugs and stuff, and I always say that to people. I'm like, you don't need drugs. The high of the stage is amazing. At the end, when, especially like a comedy, when everyone is clapping or someone
mm-hmm.
starts laughing, even in the middle of the scene, it's just this surge that goes through you. And I'm just like, I don't understand why people need to do drugs. This is 10 times better. I mean, I've never done drugs, but I assume it's 10 times better. But,
it's so funny, too. Real quick, in my chat line, I want to welcome Mountain Man. Hey, Mountain Man, how are you? He's my little co-host. He takes care of the chat room for me. Awesome, awesome assistant. And I got guest 2365 in there. Hey, what's up? Nice of you to join us. We have Carrie Sheehan as our guest today. And she's talking about one of the groups that she's involved with the Yellow Ribbon Project, which is for survivors of suicide and some of the amazing things she's done. Now, Carrie, I can totally sympathize with you on two venues. One, the acting. I've
mm-hmm.
always loved acting when I was younger. Definitely wasn't supported in the arts by my family because they just thought it was like, go get a real job kind of thing. And
mm-hmm.
now that I'm older, luckily my husband is very supportive, so I've actually been able to go full circle back into the arts, and I love it. You're absolutely right. The amazing high when you take a character and you make it come to life where people can actually sympathize with that character, where they either hate the character if it's a bad character or love them
mm-hmm.
or feel sad for them or feel that emotion. It
mm-hmm.
is a healing process at times because I know that for me, there are times that when there's a scene that something needs to come out of me, I usually dig deep for past experiences, and that's where it comes from. So I totally relate to you on that. Yep. The other thing when it comes to suicide, having worked as a police officer when I was in the homicide unit, I think that to me was the most traumatic thing that I had to deal with when it came to the family, the loved ones. Because as senseless as homicides are, or accidental deaths, or sudden deaths, which are, you know, heart attacks, all these things, the family can still kind of find a why. Not necessarily the why they want, but there's a why because, sadly, their loved one was walking down the street and got accidentally shot, or a drunk driver hit their car and they got killed, or they had a heart attack. So there's always that sense that they understand a little bit of what happened, and it's okay to talk about their loved ones, you know, share stories. But like you just said earlier, when it comes to explaining to someone your loved one took their own life, and there's no explanations. I don't care how many times when I responded to a suicide that the person left a note, it still did not explain everything to the loved ones. And there was always that guilt thing about, I should have seen the warning signs, I should have known. And later on in the show, we'll talk about some of the warning signs. But in reality, if you see warning signs, and Carrie, you can touch on this a little bit more, if you actually notice warning signs, that is a person that is crying out for help. That is a person that doesn't want to die. They don't want to actually go through with it. And again, this is just from my experience as a police officer and counseling youth.
Because half the time, if they really want to die, there won't be any warning signs.
Absolutely.
It's hard to notice any warning signs because they, you know, they really want to do it. But, you know, if they're showing warning signs, it means they want help and there's a chance, you know, that you can help them. And
absolutely, because they want that help. And I'm glad you touched on that, because that's the reality that I've seen in many cases, that when the person actually does commit suicide and goes through with it, they had already made up their mind and they were absolutely not looking for help. They just wanted out. And they were past the point of no return. So it doesn't matter how observant you are, how much you love this person at this point in theory, there really wasn't much you could have done. I mean, unless, like I said, it went back years or whatever. And there's usually an underlying factor that, in reality, only the person that takes their lives understands. So this is such an important project that you're involved with, especially young kids, because I understand, again, with counseling, Carrie, there's a lot of times, and I know you do a lot of mentoring, that when you're 14, 15 years old, something that to me might seem like trivial is the end of the world to these people, to these young people. So what are some of the things that you reach out to them and help them understand to kind of get them over that?
Well, I was just doing this during high school. I wish I was still a part of it. I'd like to be a part of it again. But
what
something
are some of the
that
things you did share when you were in high school? Because like I said, I've worked with you in a couple of venues, and I've seen how you just have a magic touch with kids. It's just amazing to see how you deal with them and you can relate to them. And I don't mean that to trivialize it. I'm just saying it's just like an unwritten connection that you have with kids, and you just seem to know when there's an emotion there that needs to be addressed. And half of the time I think you do it without even realizing it. I know. It's amazing because, I mean, I'll bring up a couple of examples in a little bit. But so when you were at that level in high school, what are some of the things that you would share with these kids to help them realize that tomorrow will definitely be better?
Well, you know, just what I would need, what I would have needed to hear back then was, you know, telling me that if somebody had told me that it wasn't my fault, like long before that. I mean, I think just people didn't understand how to deal with it, you know, because it's not often that you hear about, you know, someone. I mean, I guess it's often that you hear about it, but normally it's someone farther from you. So I think that they just didn't know how to deal with my anger. And a lot of it was anger, like after it happened. And it wasn't anger towards her, it was anger towards me. Like, I blame myself a lot. Like, I really thought that I should have been able to help her more because she did tell me that she had those feelings, but I didn't think she would really do it. And as a 13-year-old, 14-year-old, you know, when she was saying those things to me, like, you just don't have those, you don't have that ability to know that you need to tell someone. And nobody had ever explained that to me. And I think that that was the most important thing when I was working in that, working on that play, was that we told people to tell, you know. And if someone doesn't listen to you, then you go and tell someone else. Like if you tell their mom, you know, half the time their mom's not going to want to hear something like that. They're not going to want to.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And so run and you tell a teacher. You just keep telling until someone listens to you, because if they're saying that, if they're saying things like that, they do need help and they're asking for it. And now, like, I understand that she was asking for help and maybe she could have been helped, but I didn't have that knowledge. And I think it's important to get that knowledge out there, that that just because you're 13 years old or 14 years old or 10 or, you know, 16 or 28, doesn't mean people shouldn't listen to you. People should. You need to just keep telling someone until someone does listen to you. And
right, exactly. So in actuality, education is a big component, because now you're actually empowering these young people to know that, yeah, you can ask for help. And by the same token, the information you wish you had, where, okay, you were 13 years old, had you known more, maybe you could have done something. And again, that's what you're trying to pass on, as opposed to just being angry with yourself because I should have done something, when in actuality you were 13 years old. I mean, really, there was very little you could have done at that point, because you were so young, you didn't know any better. I mean, there's adults that don't know what to do in that situation, because in theory, it's a very uncomfortable situation when someone says to you, I think I want to end my life. And how do you answer to that? You know what I mean? Especially if you're not a professional, you don't understand. It's very hard to do that. So it's an amazing thing that you're doing.
That's why you go and find a professional. And that's what we tried to explain to the kids when we did that. And then we had it on another night where, you know, our parents could come. But that was the program. Like, we would find these different social issues that were affecting middle school age, because we mostly did it for middle schoolers, and then we would go in and support at middle school. And then after that, because I wasn't a teenager anymore, so I couldn't be a part of that, I started doing one through Middlesex Community College, which does similar things, and it's called Matter of Fact, and we do improvisational things around social issues that high schoolers face, because we mainly go into high schoolers. So it was pretty much like I moved on to the same kind of thing, just improv version of it. And it doesn't cost anything. So that was also nice.
I know. And you know, it's funny that I realized that, because I used to teach Upward Bound over at Salem State College. And one of the things that I find amazing is that you can sit there and you can lecture, quote unquote, at a kid in high school, and they're just going to glass over. But if you give them the same scenarios and you're acting them out, it quits. Because I know one of the things we wanted to get across was violence awareness, you know, date rape, marital violence, that kind of date violence, that kind of thing. And we acted this play out, and I swear to goodness, it was so funny because my husband, quote unquote, was a bad guy, because he was also a teacher there. And it was hysterical to see these young girls just giving him the evil eye, like, how dare you be so mean to her, and just get the, and they'd be looking at me like, you don't have to take that from him. You need to leave him. And I'm like, well, time out. It's a play.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
no,
it's
true. You invite them in, and you invite them to see this. And then afterwards, the best thing to do, we've learned, is to talk to them. Like, say, you know, and that's what our director does. She says, you know, what, because we'll do it around, like, there's different small skits, and we'll do it around different, each one a different thing. Like, we have one called Black and Blue, and it's about a girl who is being abused by her boyfriend. And so at the end, like, we'll talk to them, and some of them will come out and be like, you know, that happened to my mom, and that's why, you know, really resonated with me. And so we do them for our college in the community college, and we also go into high schools and do them. And it's really interesting to see the difference between the high schoolers and the college students. But the high schoolers they're just a great audience to work with. They really, you know, they wanna, they're, you know, they're glad to get out of class for one thing. But another thing is they actually pay attention, and they, you know, and then they have, you know, feedback at the end, and they want to talk to us about stuff. And so, yeah, it's. it's really great. I just, I don't know, I love theater, especially
right.
theater that
and,
change.
Yeah,
know?
And you know, the funny thing is, too, another thing that I noticed working with some groups, not a lot of them, but some of the girls that actually shared with me afterwards privately, because they had grown up in abusive homes, they thought that was normal.
Yeah.
They thought it was perfectly normal for your husband, boyfriend, whatever, to mm-hmm. physically abuse you, dominate you, control every movement, because that's what they'd seen
mm-hmm.
with their parents. And when they actually got this light dawn on them that, no, that's not the way it's supposed to be. It's okay for you to say no. It's okay for you to have your own life. It's okay for you to make your own decisions. And,
mm-hmm.
yes, you and your husband or your boyfriend are a team, not him dominating you and you doing everything. It really was amazing for me to see these lights come on into these girls' eyes of,
mm-hmm.
really. And
yeah.
I think that for me was the most enriching moment, because now all of a sudden it's almost like you could see a little crack in the breaking of that cycle.
Yep. And
so I can see
that's
where
the
it's
only
very
way
rewarding
to
for you.
That cycle is to, you know, educate. Education is so important on
mm-hmm.
these, you know, different subject matters. Because half the time they just don't know. Like you said, they grew up in that, and there's a statistic, I'm not sure, I'm not going to make up a number, that how many women who grew up in these homes where their dad abused their mom, they go out and they look for a guy just like that. And
that's all they know.
I don't understand how that those guys always find them, but there's something about them.
My
know.
Husband's funny. He's like, it's almost like a breeding ground. It's like the domineering men just have
uh-huh.
a knack for seeing these weak
seeing
women
it, yep.
that have been victimized, and they just gravitate to them. And that's why yep. these men that are abusive never gravitate to strong women, because they know that a strong woman is not going to take that from them. Real quick, Carrie, just to interrupt you. If you're interested in calling in and you have a question for Carrie, you can call us at 347-989-1473. Or you can go to the website, www.blogtalkradio.com/ordinary woman. Woman is spelled W-M-N. And you can actually, if you have a headset and microphone, you can click right into there and talk to us from there. Or you can actually put a question into the chat room. And Mountain Man will be more than glad to send it our way. So, again, the number is 347-989-1473. And our guest this evening is Carrie Sheehan. She is a student at Middlesex Community College, and she's also working as a dental assistant, and she's done a lot of volunteer work. On that note, Carrie, I want to ask you about your work with UTEC. What is UTEC, and what are some of the things that you've done with them?
UTEC is a teen center. In downtown Lowell. I first started going there when I was a junior in high school, and I continued going there and doing, I did the Young Women's Program, Young Women's Project, Creative Writing, Double Dutch. Young Women's Project, we created a magazine called Goddess. And I'm pretty sure it's still in print. I actually don't know, but we started it originally, and it was pretty awesome. Like, we interviewed different people and put in information in there. And my big project was back when the rape crisis budget got cut,
mm-hmm.
and they had to close 13 out of the 20 rape crisis services in Massachusetts, and so I interviewed Elizabeth Cohen at the time.
Mm-hmm.
She was the director of Rape Crisis Services, and
right.
and she talked to me about how important the funding is, and you know how much, you know, how many people that they service how many people they service yearly, and it, you know, it's now the Lowell Rape Crisis Services is over many more towns, and so they have a lot more people calling in, and they actually have to share the hotline with three different centers, and just a lot of changes when the cutbacks happened. So,
and that's very true. Like, to touch briefly on what you were talking about, the rape crisis is, again, as a police officer, when I was in the investigative unit, that was one of the things we had to do, rape investigations before they got their own unit and have rape investigators. But one of the things is that people don't realize when you have a rape victim, every time she needs to be questioned, or he, because men do get raped as well and they do become victims, every time these people have to be re-interviewed, have to be prepped for court if there's a case, have to testify, it's almost like they're being re-victimized all over again because they have to live through the whole trauma. They have to live through the whole stigma. And then on top of that, they have to deal with the coulda, woulda, shouldas of how you could have prevented this happening to you. So the rape crisis centers were so vital a resource for police officers to be able to refer the rape victims to help us as police officers empower them to have the courage to go testify and to put the bad guys in jail or the bad girls, because we've had a couple of those. And it just boggled my mind that that was one of the first things cut. You know,
those
it's more important. It was more,
Those kind of services are always the first thing to go.
It blows my mind because it was like, okay, you have a line item on the budget to beautify this park. That's all well and good. I'm glad you have flowers and benches and all. But here you have a viable service to help victims overcome and be able to have the courage to move on with their lives. And that's one of the first things cut. Always a pet peeve of mine. But now, the one thing about UTEC that is very unique is a lot of our listeners are probably saying, well, it's a youth center. What's the big deal? What is the one thing that is really different about UTEC from other youth centers as far as the governing board and that?
It's the leadership team is the a group of teenagers who make pretty much most of the decisions about they do the interviewing, but I mean the executive director makes the final say, but they pretty much are able to tell him, you know, we like this one, hire her after the interviewing process. So they run the show and they learn, you know, they're taught leadership skills and I was part of the leadership team at one point and it was a really cool thing. Like, I mean, we had these meetings with like minutes and stuff and I learned all about that. we would go to these meetings and we would discuss different things going on with the center and like rules and stuff, and we were also part of the court system for UTEC, which we would decide, you know, if a teen is causing some trouble, we would be members of the court because we would have a peer court, so that it was fair because you were being, you know, judged by your peers, and you know we would decide what the punishment should be if they, you know, are banned from UTEC for a week or whatever. So there's a lot that the leadership does. The leadership team does, and they're in charge of getting fundraisers together. And so, and most of the kids, the people who work there, I mean, there's full-time paid staff, but then there's these part-time staff, and they're high school students, and maybe some college age, early college age people, really like, you know, running the show.
Exactly.
And one thing that's really different about them.
It's very different, and this is funny because, again, talking about cutbacks, one of the things is that a lot of people don't realize that back in the early 90s, there was an initiative started by, I believe, the Clinton administration called the Enterprise Community Enterprise Zone Project. And what they wind up doing was allocating a certain amount of money to certain cities, and it wasn't just given to you. It had to be by the census tract, the amount of money being generated in that particular area. So the areas that got it were the areas that had the most need. And the city of Lowell, which, again, I wish our listeners would do some research on this, because the city of Lowell was like a model for the usage for the seed money. City of Lowell got $2.3 million back in, I believe it was 95 or 96, somewhere in there. And they were able to make that $2.3 million last 10 years. And UTEC actually was one of the first programs that was funded by the seed money. The other thing that was different about the city of Lowell was the fact that the $2.3 million was decided where it would go by a board of community residents that lived within the area of the enterprise zone. So it wasn't decided by the mayor. It wasn't decided by the city manager. It wasn't decided by any politicians, quote-unquote, or powers that be within City Hall. It was actually decided by a group of people that actually lived in the community where the services were going to go. Mm-hmm. And UTEC kind of modeled after that by having the kids govern themselves. And again, UTEC actually was one of the first youth centers in the country that actually did that. Now, Carrie, were you around in 99 when they did the All-American City competition?
Yes, I was alive then. but I was entering high school, so that was my freshman year of high school.
Did you wind up going to Philadelphia for the competition?
I did not, but I heard about that we were the All-American City, but I don't know.
Yeah, one of the things that happened, and I bring that up because UTEC was such a big component, the All-American City competition is awarded to cities that have overcome drastic challenges and financial issues and have been able to revitalize the community. And Lowell was picked out of, Lowell was picked out of like 300-something cities, and then it brought down to 30 that went to the All-American City competition. And Lowell did wind up winning one of the top 10 spots and to get the designation. But the key point that got Lowell that was the UTEC program because of the fact that teenagers were in a leadership position where, like you said, if there was an infraction, they were being basically dealt with by their peers in a confidential setting. But nonetheless, so you kids were learning, and I'll say you kids because at that time you were a teenager, you were learning all these viable leadership skills.
Yeah.
And one of the great things that I noticed, I was on the board of the Enterprise Community Board that allocated some of that money. We actually had two youth representatives on our board, and usually they wind up coming out of either UTEC or the Adam Project, and it just blew me away how they understood things like minutes. They understood what a motion were. They understood the etiquette of voting. Even to the point that it blew my mind. I mean, I think I was like in my 30s when I understood all of that. When I had a 16-year-old representative from UTEC, we were going to take a vote on something related to UTEC, and this young man said, I'm going to excuse myself from the vote because there's a conflict of interest. I'm on the board of UTEC. And I'm like, hello, world, watch out. This kid's going to kick butt because it was just an amazing skill. And these are things that the average American person doesn't see. All they see is like, yeah, Lowell got $2.3 million, and what did they do with this? And politician got it, not even close. I mean, so you actually have a lot of marketable skills that came out of that because of that.
Yep.
Now, another thing, you said you were involved with the Girls, Inc., and you and I actually caused some ruckus up in there. What were some of the things that you did at Girls, Inc.?
Some of the things, I did the acting group. I did gymnastics for many years there.
You do gymnastics, and I love when people say, I did gymnastics. You don't do gymnastics. Gymnastics is hard. That's not something you do, like, pass away the time. You actually have to practice. You also taught gymnastics at the Girls,
yep.
Inc.
Yep, I was a coach.
And, And what kind of group did you teach?
I taught classes. There was a younger kids class and then some older classes. And then I ran the team for a while. you're my assistant coach.
Oh, yeah, I'll never forget that trip. Where the heck did we go? Was it New York?
Yep, we went to Endicott, New York.
That was the never-ending adventure. Oh, my gosh. I feel so bad, Penny. She's such a sweetie. One of the other moms, I was supposed to drive the van. I wound up getting sick as a dog, and they put me on this medication. And, Carrie, you couldn't drive at that time, right? Because you were, like, under 21 or something. So we're sitting there. We got a van load of girls, no one to drive. And this mother, I swear to goodness, out of nowhere, she's like, I'll drive. And she drove I don't even think she packed any clothes. She just got in the van and drove us down there, and it was a great competition.
Yeah, she didn't have any clothes. She just had the ones she was wearing. Yeah, that lady, she's awesome.
I'm looking at this woman like, you're a nut in a good way. I'm like, oh, my God,
yeah.
I feel like the biggest slouch in the world.
Yeah, she's, like, one of the most giving people. She's always like that. Always like that, you know, in the drop of a hat. Actually, last Tuesday we went to IHOP afterwards, and after we had Institute, we went to IHOP, and she showed up because her son is home before he goes back. He's going to go back to Italy to go to school. But so she came so she could pay for him because I don't think he had any money. And then she got there and sat down, and there's a girl, one of my friends, she's pregnant, and her and her boyfriend just got an apartment, and they have very little money, and they're, you know, getting married soon. And they weren't going to get anything. They were just going to, you know, drink water. I was going to share my food with her, but all of a sudden she just comes back from her car and hands both of them $10 each and tells them to order food, especially since, you know, Patricia, she's pregnant. So
right. So
she was like, you know, you need to eat. You're pregnant. You need to eat food. And so, you know, she's just always was like that. So that was funny.
It is,
you know,
like
I let back up.
Oh, I know.
I totally
forgot
about that.
Oh, my gosh. I can't forget about it because I think about it all the time. Anytime I want to be like, why do I have to do that? Penny just pops into my mind going, you know, you really need to stop already. Can you imagine you just jumping into a van with no clothes, just like, go. And I think we had to stop and buy her a toothbrush because she didn't have it. And just because she wanted to make sure that these girls didn't miss out on this competition. And I swear to goodness, I felt like the biggest baby. I'm like, you know what? You need to suck it up because this woman just made you look stupid. And it was such a good lesson to me because it really showed me what an amazing woman she is and how important it
how
is.
How giving,
sometimes.
Yeah. She's a very giving woman.
Giving woman. And the thing is, she never wants anything in return for it.
Nope, never.
That's just the way she is.
I got a chance to give back to her because when she got married, she had these servants. She had servants at her wedding because it was like a princess style thing. And so we all had these cute little aprons that she made, of course. She's so funny. And we got to serve the people there. So that was cool. I got to give back a little bit. But, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it is. And I love Penny because she is. She's just an amazing woman. And I'll never forget that. And the thing is, it wind up being a really good competition. I mean, the girls just did a great job. And the Girls Inc. gymnastics program, which did they ever get that back or did they wind up not renewing it?
No. I mean, it was during when a lot of people just didn't really have the money for it anymore. Actually, a lot of the girls who were continuing on, who could continue on, they were having money issues. And so, like, the parents couldn't afford to pay for it, and girls couldn't afford to keep the program. So, but I think they rented out equipment to cheerleaders. So,
yeah, people don't realize keeping a gymnastics program is expensive. People don't realize how expensive it is to keep the equipment in the room you need, because you need a lot of room, and then the traveling and all that. But it was a very good program, and it really got a lot of the girls going on the right path. I know for me it was funny to get back into it because I did a little gymnastics back in the day, and I thought the funniest thing though, Carrie, was anytime you told, especially the younger ones, oh, my God, they were such a hoot. That little girl, the tiny one, oh, she killed me when you had her do the the funky chicken, oh, my gosh, it just stole everybody's heart. But I remember
chicken dance.
Chicken dance.
She couldn't do it at the right time. She was so cute.
She had that dynamite smile, so she knew better. She's like, you know what, I don't really know it, but I'll just smile at the judges and I'm good.
Her scores would always be so good, and I was like, she didn't even do like a flight movement.
No, it was just because she had her winning personality. But one of the things that used to kill me, it's so funny, was that anytime you say, all right, I'm going to teach you this, and she's like, that's too hard, I can't do it, and then you would do it, she'd be like, the old lady did it, so I got to do it. And it was so hysterical because you weren't, like, even in your 20s yet. And here she's like, well, the old lady did it, so I got to do it. It was just a great example that you were showing these girls that, yeah, we can do this. We can definitely do this. And I'm going to show you how to do it. And they just always looked up to you because you, and the other thing that got me was your demeanor. It was just that sweet smile and nothing ever fazed you. It was like, whatever, we're going to have fun with it. And you guys do great. And they did. They always wind up being winners in that.
Oh, that was an interesting year. Remember Alexis breaking my nose right before prom?
Oh.
Do you remember that?
Oh, my goodness. I remember that. I was like,
I was actually looking at those pictures the other day, my prom pictures. Everybody told me, oh, it looks fine. You can't even tell. And I look at those pictures. I was like, thank goodness I have good lying friends because I would not have gone to prom.
Oh, I know. And I was one of them telling you, no, you look great. You just put a little bit of makeup
on.
It looks fine.
Okay,
and
but
I
have to tell the story because it's so hilarious. So it's cute. Everybody like it. But anyways, so I'm spotting this girl, and she's doing a back south beam. We have a nice mat and everything, but she had over-rotated, so she's going to come back down on the beam. So I'm like, I just didn't even think about it. I just, you know, put myself under her to make her bounce off of me and onto the mat instead of, you know, landing on the, oh, my gosh, I would never have been able to live myself if she had landed back down on the beam, which is what would have happened. So anyways, I got her knee into the nose, and I just remember it was like this instant migraine, and I was knocked unconscious. So I was, like, laying there on this mat, and I wake up, like, probably instantly, almost instantly, I wake up and I hear the littlest one, Shakia, goes, what's the number for 911? And I stand up really quick, don't call 911! I just remember being like, I'm the only adult with all these kids, and it's nighttime, and their parents aren't due for another hour, so I was like, okay, everybody call your parents,
my God. And then I remember it was the following week when I go, The little one again, word of wisdom, she looks at me, she says, well, not for nothing, but she should have known better than to spot her there. She should have been on the side. And I'm like, God. Are you kidding me? She just like said,
I was supposed to be. If I wasn't there, she would have landed on the beam. So I was doing my job.
I know, but it was so funny the way she just like, well, you know, she should have been on the side. That's where she should have been. Oh, my gosh. It was so funny. And I remember the time that one of the girls was having a time with her this month, and she's like, I can't do it. And I really forgot how old I was, so I'm up on this beam, and I showed it to her. And now I'm on the thing, and then the little one again, who's the voice of reason, says, you do realize that you probably could have gotten hurt because you're kind of old to be on there.
Yeah.
And it was pretty funny because that's when it dawned on me. I'm like, yeah, you know, she has a point. I am way too old to be doing this.
Sometimes you forget. Like, even now I'll go to do something and I forget it's been so many years and I haven't stretched out. I don't have the flexibility anymore. Like, what did I do the other day? A couple weeks ago, I did a round off, and oh my gosh, I'm only 25 years old, but the next few days, like, my lower back was killing me. I was like, oh my gosh, I cannot do this anymore. And it was just a round off.
I'm telling you, when I did that forward flip off the beam and landed it, and then she did it after me, she was like, okay, old lady did it, I gotta do it. But when the little one looks at me and goes, you know, you could have gotten hurt, and you're too old to be doing that. And it's funny because, like you said, the next day my arms were killing me, and I'm like thinking to myself, what were you thinking? Because in my mind, as soon as I got on that beam, oh, I'm 15 years old again. I'm high school, and it's like, no, and people don't realize that gymnastics is a beast of itself. Like, I know, for example, cheerleaders, they always get a bad rap that that's not a sport. Trust me, you try doing that, and your body will talk to you in parts that you didn't know existed.
Exactly.
It's amazing everything they go. And you're right, the back muscles and everything, all of a sudden they're like, hello, what are you doing?
Yeah, if you're out there and you want to understand gymnastics, I'm telling you, get out and watch Stick It. It's a movie that they made, and it's kind of documentary stuff. Not really. The girl, the main character, narrates it, and she is hilarious. She's like, you know, try, like, talking about rips and stuff. Like, people don't understand what rips are. But when you're on the beam, on the bars, and you're doing all those skills, and then you get off, there's, like, skin hanging from your hands because your hands really weren't meant to do that.
No,
they don't understand rips. They don't understand,
you know,
like, all the pain that. So, you know, once you watch that and then you start watching the Olympics, you'll have a lot of sympathy for those girls.
And then every time you're watching America's Funniest Home Video and somebody goes slamming into the vault, you, like, feel for them. Everybody else is laughing. I'm going, oh, that hurt. Oh,
it,
you know.
And, you know, it's funny. You're talking about your body's not meant to do some of these things. Like, I mean, to this day, if I put the grip too hard on a baseball bat or even sweeping, the calluses will come back.
Yeah.
Because they were there
your
for
body.
So long. And it's a whole new animal.
I remember my coach Kayla saying to us one day, we're working on we're just stretching and we're sitting there and she's like, your body is not meant to do gymnastics. Like, you know, you're going to regret this when you're older, but you know, if you really enjoy this and you really have fun, then go for it. Keep doing it. But I remember thinking, why would I regret it? This is fun. And now I see an orthopedist for my knees, which I destroyed doing gymnastics. I have So if you really, really want your kids to do sport, make sure you're okay with what's going to happen years down the road. Because I have chondromalacia in my knees, which means my kneecaps are like grinding on my bone. So I have to do physical therapy and wear these ugly braces. So just remember down the road that you might have some regrets. And I didn't believe her, but I do now.
Oh, I'm telling you. And I wasn't into it fully, like, you know, competing all the time and stuff. But to me, it was, like, amazing. Like, I know that to this day, like, my back, I'll be like, okay, I can do a back bend. And I do, but my back still goes, payback time. Because you do. It's muscles that just weren't meant to be going in that way.
Nope.
So, Carrie, real quick, oh, my God, because the time's already run out. I didn't even get to – see, these are the amazing people that are guests on my show, and this is why I'm never going to run out of topics because I have to keep having them back so we can share the rest of this stuff. So, Carrie, real quick, I got less than 3 minutes. You're going to Middlesex Community College. You're hoping to be a social worker.
Yes. Yep.
Awesome. And I can see you doing an amazing job. In the meantime, you're working as a dental assistant.
Yep.
Excellent. Now, as far as the acting, you continuing to do that as well?
Yep, I am. I still do theater with Middlesex Community College. I do Matter of Fact, which I was talking about earlier, and I also am part of a theater company. Last fall, we did Cabaret, and I'm planning on auditioning for the musical again. So.
Excellent. Now, another thing I didn't even get to share with my listeners is you have a beautiful singing voice. I love your voice. I remember one time I actually kamikazed her to be an angel in my pageant at Christmas, but I didn't tell her like till 10 minutes before. I'm like, Carrie, come here. Go out there, put this on, and sing this. I thought you were going to have a heart attack.
Yeah, it was fun, though.
I figured you were so young that if I had told you before, you'd like run away on me. I wouldn't have shown up. And it was amazing. Everybody's like, oh my gosh, she sings so beautiful.
Don't be mean. You gave me more than that time. Don't act like you're so mean. I had like a week. I had to learn a way in a meeting.
Well, yeah, you did. You did. But it was funny because even then you're still like your knees were buckling and you're like breaking out into a sweat. And the funny thing is that I think like you said something to me like, I can't breathe. You started.
Yeah.
And I said to her, just you're by yourself. And I remember telling the light guy, shut all the lights off, just the spotlight so she can't see anybody. And then I'll never forget when you came off the stage, you're like, that wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah,
singing
it was.
Solo.
It was
scary.
Yeah. Oh, there's the voice of the lady telling me I have 90 seconds left. So, Carrie, thank you so much for being on the show with me. I'm definitely going to have you back.
Definitely.
So, people, look out for the Yellow Ribbon Project. Is that what it's called?
Yep. Yeah, it's yellowribbon.org.
Yellowribbon.org, and that's for survivors of suicide. It also has information on prevention and awareness and what you can do to help get the word out as far as prevention. Also, if you ever get a chance, check out UTEC in Lowell. Great project and a great opportunity to also help out in the community and in any way you can. Carrie, thank you so much for being my guest. Like I said, I'm definitely going to have you back. And any last words, any goodbyes to anybody you want to mention?
I don't know who's listening, but I sent out a lot of invites, so let me know that you listened. And I'm cool. Glad you listened. You did.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And they can always hear it again if they go to the website, www.blogtalkradio.com/ordinarywoman, WMN. It'll be on there, and they can actually listen at the later time. So I'm out of time. Good night. And Carrie, thank you so much for joining me. Good night to our listeners. Good night for Mountain Man for helping me out in the chat room. And thank you so much, and I will see you on Monday.
Okay. Bye-bye.